if I could give parents any piece of advice, it's
and you perhaps don't make it. I mean, is that something of concern?
Like the amount of speed the kids have these days.
Never forget why you play the sport, you know, which is for the love of golf.
This morning we are so privileged and to get a completely different view, something that's not always highlighted, but we've got a fitness specialist this morning specifically focusing on golf, Gavin Groves. Welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Achan, thank you very much for your time this morning. I know that we're starting this day with you having some water issues at your house. So thank you for still making it and looking as fresh as you are.
Yeah, I was, I actually thought I was going to be behind the scenes as per usual, but now that I'm in the camera, it's fine. You've got me.
Arthie, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having Gav. Thanks for being here.
Arthie, always a pleasure.
If you see me doze off, just you guys do your thing today.
Listen, Arthie, as is tradition of the show, you walked in with two Red Bulls this morning, not one. If you fall asleep, I'm contacting Red Bull to find out what formula have they changed.
Yes, or we need more Red Bulls in our studio.
I mean, actually, Arthie, have you ever, when last did you do a show or an episode with good sleep?
Listen, it's actually been decent the last couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden the fan.
Yeah.
So right, but I'm a survivor, so we'll push through and let's hope Gav does all the talking and I'll give him my two cents as well, but we're ready for this.
Well, I've prepared and hopefully I can prompt him as we go along. But Gavin, let's start with who you are and what you do.
Okay, so that's you want the short version of that story?
No, you in your hands.
So I actually started as more of a rugby player. So I came more from a rugby background. I played semi-professionally. Started studying at the University of Pretoria. Gosh, we're talking early 2000s here. And I play golf socially. So, as most sports people do, you tend to be fairly good at various different sports. So I actually played okay. I think I got down to about a 7 or something like that. And it got to the point where I think I kind of realized that professional rugby probably wasn't the avenue for me. And my passion, I think opportunities.
Okay.
I think like a lot of golfers and a lot of sports people, I think opportunities play a big role in shaping their careers. And as it worked out, the opportunities that were afforded me, doors opened and closed very quickly. And, you know, you make the best decision that you can at the time. And honours was something that I wanted to pursue, honours in biokinetics. So in order to get into honours, you had to have a very good academic record. So that required more time and obviously had to make a call about the rugby. So, you know, following biokinetics at the University of Pretoria, I think I had a chat with Rob Walters a couple of years back. I remember him from cricket days. So he was Titans coach for a couple of years. And he was actually, we had a conversation around golf. And he was actually asked to open up a fitness facility at a golf course. And that, I guess, planted the seed of, I wonder how many people play golf with injuries. Coming from a biokinetics background, thinking I could maybe leverage my degree, you know, in another sport. And didn't really think much of it. And about a month later, the World of Golf and the University of Pretoria kind of sat me down and they said, well, listen, we have this opportunity for you to go and work at the World of Golf while you're still studying. So as a student to earn a salary, you know, and study at the same time, it's, you know, who's going to say no to that? So, so myself and Ian Corbett, who's a good friend of mine, you know, we moved to the World of Golf and we started working. We had absolutely no idea. We just knew we loved golf and we were at a practice facility that was, you know, at the time had 13-odd thousand members. It was, you know, it was great. And slowly but surely, we started to see that there was a real need for training, for exercise. And from a recreational golfer's perspective, you had to choose how much time you had, you know, in a day. You could either practice golf or you could train. But if you had a facility that had both, you could do both. And if you were going to train, you may as well train to improve your golf. And that was kind of the angle that we approached. And spending the time at the World of Golf, I studied the PGA. So for me, that was important because I wanted to get a better understanding of the technical side of golf. And I could relate more to other golf coaches. You know, when we're talking about a golfer's technical moves, he's over the top, he's under the plane, you know, hanging back, that kind of thing. You know, I could talk the same language and I could get buy-in from coaches that way. And then we were exposed to TPI. So, you know, TPI in the States had an institution and basically a program that would get golfers of and professionals of all angles to basically start speaking the same language. So you would have your level one, which was a base level. And then after level one, you would then specialize either as a golf professional or as a fitness or as a medical person. So, and using that landscape, you would get the fitness side, the scientific side of golf more to the fore. And I think that was sort of mid-2000s, mid to late 2000s. And that's kind of where I think golf fitness exploded. You know, there were a lot more people understanding golf fitness, understanding the role it had to play in golf. But at the time, I was still very much involved in recreational golfers. I had a little bit of exposure to performance golf, as it were. Worked with a couple of professionals while I was at the World of Golf, and that kind of got me started on the angle of performance golf, elite golf. And then I was fortunate enough to get an opportunity to go to the University of Pretoria, so back to the roots, to work with the Tux Golf Academy. And there was basically 95% performance golf. So, and that was 2013. So, yeah, that was the start of it all, I guess.
And tell me, how old were you when you got that opportunity at World of Golf?
Was, gosh, 24, I think.
Yeah, so young. How did they identify you?
I think it was more a case of there was a collaboration between the World of Golf and the High Performance Center at the time.
Okay.
And myself and Ian Corbett had expressed interest in golf. And I think they saw an opportunity to take young students and kind of mold them into something that they wanted. At the same time, we needed experience. So, and that's how it worked.
So basically, when I was at the Gary Player, I was his test dummy.
You were. We go way back.
Hence why I'm sitting in this seat and I'm not playing on the European tour.
We all learn from our mistakes.
Oh, you win some, you lose some.
I mean, you win some, you lose some. And Gav, on the what's so you on the amateur and recreational side, I mean, that's quite interesting to me that's where it started, because I would have thought the professionals drove it more towards the recreational golfers. Where for you, it was sort of the other way around.
Yeah, the numbers are always with recreational golfers. Your weekend golfers, they're the ones that are buying the golf clubs. They're the ones that are paying the subs at the at your golf courses. You know, so most of the golf industry is around amateur golf.
Yeah.
But we tend to look to professional golf as, I guess, the standard setters.
Yeah.
So whatever happens at, you know, at a tour level kind of filters down. But in terms of the actual numbers, you know, the numbers are always going to be with the recreational golfers.
So I think you're underplaying your rugby quite a bit. It was a big part of your life.
Yeah.
You played it on a very good and high level. So amateur, you're starting. When was that big transition to professional golfers? And what does that split look like today?
So from a work point of view, once I moved to the University of Pretoria, we had a couple of very good amateur golfers. So at the time, Brandon Stone was still in the States. He was playing college golf. He was still seeing Llewellyn van Leeuwen at the time, who was head of the program. And when he came back from college, that was sort of the best amateur golfer that I had an opportunity to work with. I'd still worked with a couple of pros at the World of Golf, but I think in terms of performance and the performance element of it, and being a bit performance orientated, I think Brandon was kind of like one of the first. Along with him, Xander Lombard was also part of the academy at the time. So there were a couple of really good amateurs that had just turned professional, and we would then walk through that journey of professional golf with them, you know, from the early days of playing on the Sunshine Tour, getting opportunities to play Challenge Tour, getting your card, losing your card, that kind of thing. So that journey started 2013. So it's 10 years of performance golf now. And then obviously I started working in 2007 at the World of Golf, so it's 16 years in the industry. So,
sure. So you've got all the knowledge and the experience you need.
Well, you keep learning, but I mean, I've seen a fair few things. You put it that way.
And tell me, from a South African perspective, what role did we have in setting some of the standards versus learning from the rest of the world?
It's interesting. South Africa has a remarkable amount of talented golfers. I think from, in terms of facilities and what we have, I think we're a lot further now than what we've ever been before. But I think South Africa is always, and again, you know, this comes down to numbers. In America, there are over 70 million golfers. Mm. You know, in South Africa, there are 70 million people in total.
Yeah.
So the numbers are always going to be, you know, where, or the, let me put it this way, the performance will always be where the numbers are.
Yeah.
Just because there are more options.
Yeah.
And so for a long time, the States has always been at the fore in terms of developing information, developing, you know, I guess, like your facilities and that kind of thing. But as the information age has taken over and we've seen a revolution with the internet and smartphones and that kind of thing, we've seen a lot of other countries start to progress a lot faster. And now, you know, we're seeing countries like South Africa where, you know, thanks to systems like the Golf RSA National Squad, you know, we've had two winners of the British Amateur in the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, whereas the only time South Africans have ever won the amateur before that was like in the 1960s, I think it was. So, you know, that's all of a sudden we're seeing some incredible talent come through, and with the likes of like a Casey Jarvis turned professional last year, and all of a sudden he's, you know, 3/4 of the way to securing a DP card through Challenger, and he hasn't won an event yet. So, like, those are... Yeah, we're seeing a lot of the fruits of systems like Golf RSA and what they've done with the national squad. But also the standard of golf is so good that we're seeing a lot of international players choosing to come to the Sunshine Tour and apply their trade here because of opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, if you chat to any of the professional golfers, you know, what they really want, you know, besides the money and the sponsorship is opportunity to play.
So before I dive into a little bit more, just take us through that British Amateur Championship. I mean, what it means to get there. Just give us a little bit of insight for those that don't really know, because we sort of just talked past it, and there hasn't been made enough fuss about it.
Mm.
But, I mean, that's big stats if the last time in the 60s that we did something significant like that.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, amateur golf in Europe.
And amateur, sorry.
Yes.
I apologize for interrupting, but amateur golf is amateurs with the eye on becoming professionals. You're not talking about your weekend
top
golfers.
top amateur players in the world that will qualify to play those events. So it's not like Gav can just go enter and go play. It's obviously the best of the best in the world in the amateur category. You know, whether it's college players or top South African players, top anyone actually. So just playing in those events and having opportunity to play, you need to be good players to be there, you know.
Yeah.
So, but you can reflect on that. And I think also reflect on the opportunity after winning that. I think that's also something
talk
to talk
us through
about.
That a little bit.
Yeah, amateur golf in Europe and, I mean, in the UK is very prestigious. You know, there was a time where winning amateur events was more prestigious than winning professional events. I mean, there's a reason why the British Amateur Trophy is, you know, like 3 feet high and the claret jug is like a foot high. It was actually more prestigious to win the British Amateur than it was to win the Open, because at the time, you know, if you were a professional golfer, we're going way back now, we're going early 1900s. If you were a professional golfer, you worked in the, you know, in the pro shop or you built clubs, so it was very much a blue collar kind of occupation. So the prestigious, the real, you know, stars of the show were the amateurs. So it carries a lot of weight overseas. And even in college golf, you know, there's college sports in general, like the NCAAs, it carries a huge amount of following. And there's a lot of prestige that comes with winning those kinds of events. So for our golfers to be able to travel from here overseas and play in some of these big amateur events carries a huge amount of weight. And obviously the winnings, you know, some of those events, you know, it comes with a lot of benefits too. So you're really a part of history. We were very fortunate to be part of Aldrich's journey last year at Lytham. We were there. I actually caddied for Carl De Beer, who lost him in the quarterfinals.
So
it was really fun to watch. And what was even more amazing for me was on the final day, it was English Golf for Bairstow was playing against Aldrich. and that they sold tickets, I think, for £10 a ticket, you know, access to the facility to come and watch. And there were over 3,000 people that came from all over to come and watch an amateur event.
It's more than viewership more than on the Sunshine Tour.
Absolutely nuts.
Or, you know, people going into the weekend. To watch.
And I mean, they had to get a couple of marshals to hold up some rope, you know, to try and give the. It was just, it was one of those moments. And I think, you know, possibly in my career, I went through a bit of a low last year, and going to the amateur and seeing golf at its most authentic form. You know, like amateur golf and people just loving golf for the sake of loving golf.
Relatable golf.
You know, and just the whole, you know, being at Lytham, you know, that was also where Gary Player won the Open. And it was one of those moments where it was like, this is why I work in this industry. Because it was just so, it was soulful, if I can put it that way. And that was, you know, all the Golf RSA guys afterwards, when, you know, when he won, running onto the green, it was just, exhilaration. It was incredible.
Christian Maas caddied for him.
So, you know, maybe he's going to be up there in a couple of weeks' time when I go up. We're there for the amateur again, and hopefully, you know, he lifts the trophy. That would be incredible to have two South Africans back to back.
Christian Maas is such a good amateur golfer. He's doing wonders overseas at the
moment. Yeah, he's a Texas
I think, Gavin, you guys can correct me because I want to get back to your low from last year. But it felt, if you look at Albie, Casey, Christian Maas, Kyle, it feels like we haven't had a squad like this in quite some time.
It's been a couple of years. I mean, you go just a few years back, you've got Jaden Schaper, you've got Wilco Nienaber, you've got Gary Kigo,
Yovan
Nubula, who won the amateur himself.
I suppose, you know, so it's these two generations quite close to each other.
Very, very good. And now we it's interesting with Golf RSA, we're moving into a new phase where we're almost having to not rebuild, but I think invest a lot in the young golfers that are coming through, the 15, 16, 17-year-olds now that are pushing through that are unbelievably talented. But just to make sure that we look after them well, that we keep their love for golf at the fore, because I think, you know, in a professional era that we're in now, golfers want to progress very early and turn pro soon, you know, with the prospect of earning huge amounts of money. But, you know, never forget why you play the sport, you know, which is for the love of golf.
Yeah.
So, you know, trying to remind them that it's that should be pushing, you know, what they do, but at the same time equipping them with information like fitness, like psychology, like nutrition, and using those to help them develop more holistically.
So just before I go into the Golf RSA, just I don't think a lot of people understand how Golf RSA fits into South Africa.
So Golf RSA is basically the umbrella under which all the other golfing bodies fall. So like Women's Golf, Saga, all of that falls underneath Golf
and
RSA.
And everyday golfer like us.
Exactly.
Like me. Sorry.
Exactly. But then underneath all of that, we get the Golf RSA National Squad, which is the performance squad. And that is, I'm not sure a lot of people know, but it's privately funded by Mr. Johan Rupert. And basically all the stuff that we've been able to do over the last, you know, 6 or 7 years, 8 years, wouldn't have been possible without his backing. So, you know, we're incredibly fortunate to be part of a structure like that. But it's been a very fluid journey, I guess. You know, we've changed a lot over the last couple of years, and we brought people in to try and create a structure that puts us on the map, not just in terms of being competitive, but in terms of being the leaders. So, I mean, Theo Besaidenhout has been fundamental in terms of changing the culture of the squad.
Psychologist for the squad.
Golf psychologist. Yeah. You know, in terms of making us believe, because we are, that we are the leaders in amateur golf in South Africa. That the people around the world would look at us and look at what are they doing? Why are they so successful? Why are we seeing so much, you know, going on there? And when we tell them what we're doing, because it's, we're pretty much an open book, they are surprised.
Yeah,
because we don't have a national center where you have one coach and one trainer, and you know we have a very inclusive structure. So we include the golf coaches who help to develop those players. You know, we include them in the journey because they have been part as much a part of the journey as we will be. So we've had numerous coaches at our national camps. We invite them in. We communicate with them. My role is to communicate on the fitness side with the various trainers. I'm never going to try and hog all the players to myself. I would rather they see a trainer close to their home or close to their golf coach, because that would be
sustainable.
That would be more sustainable. And then I would rather communicate with the trainer to make sure that we're on the same page in terms of helping the player develop more holistically.
And your official role at Golf RSA?
So I play many roles, taxi driver being one of them. But so I'm the fitness consultant. So I will consult with them on all matters regarding to the fitness side. So, you know, if there's nutrition that needs to be addressed, if there's injuries that need to be addressed, you know, I will either help the player myself, or I will, you know, work with another another professional to make sure that we get the job done. We do all the structures around the fitness side. So it's warm-up routines, it's recovery, it's helping them understand the role that fitness has in their journey of training. A lot of these kids are quite young, so we're seeing a lot of early development issues, so early specialization issues. So, you know, helping them understand that and why it's so important to still play other sports as well as golf. And so that's been, it's been incredible. I mean, it's been, for me, I think you're working with professional golfers is amazing, and I've got great relationships with the guys that I work with. I love them to bits, but it's difficult to work with pros.
Sure.
It's a tough journey. It's ruthless. It's not fair. And when you're in the background, you know, you bleed with your players. So when they're struggling, you're struggling. And when you have a couple of guys struggling and a couple of guys playing really well, it's an emotional roller coaster. So to have involvement with Golf RSA and the enthusiasm of the kids, and going back to, I guess, the pure love of golf, I think grounds you a little bit more, so that it's like, okay, I can handle the pros as long as I've got, you know, my involvement with the amateurs.
I think let's elaborate on what you just discussed. So if we had to go back 10, 15 years of the elite amateur golfers, I would like to, you know, so I was one of them in a sense, where I played all the amateur events, traveled around the world as an amateur, played two Eisenhower trophies for my country, etc. So, but to elaborate on that, like, the kids that I fit and see now all swing it past the PGA Tour average.
Yeah.
Back in the day when I was there, when I was playing, I mean, you would have, you know, one out of 50 that was like a beast. You know, you would have a Tyron Ryan, or you'd have a Hayden Porteous or Brandon Stone who used to hit it a mile. And everyone else was generally, you know, just hitting average distances and plodding along. Now, I'll get a 13-year-old kid swinging at 160 miles an hour out of the blue. Like, it's just, just insane. Like, the amount of speed the kids have these days is just mind-blowing. Like, I think we need to elaborate on that a bit. Do you think it's part of Golf RSA structure? Do you think there's more involvement in fitness and attention to it? You know,
all the hype of speed and acceleration and,
you know,
drive around the courses.
Yeah,
what they always talk about.
Yeah, there's definitely, I would say, a couple of role players in that. I think technology and equipment is keeping a lot of players in the game, you know, with the amount of speed that you're able to generate, and with all the restrictions that, you know, the rule makers are bringing in, somehow the club manufacturers are still able to develop speed.
Yeah.
So I think from an equipment perspective, there's definitely keeping, you know, and now with the diversity of shafts and heads and weights and movable balls, weights and ball and all that kind of thing, you know, kids are experiencing a lot more speed now than they were able to, you know, when you had the, you know, the old, more traditional equipment, but, you know, 15, 20 years ago. I think from a fitness point of view, I want to say it's a little polarized. Like, I think the kids that play a lot of golf now, I think, move less than they did back then. I was fortunate. You talk about the rugby days. I played rugby with A.B. de Villiers. So he was Blue Bulls fly off in our Craven Week team. And, I mean, he was an incredible athlete. But he also played scratch golf. But he also played provincial tennis and obviously provincial cricket. So he was, you know, his development was more holistic. We're seeing a lot of kids nowadays specializing in golf from as young as 10, 12, 13.
Yeah. Mm.
And as you maybe got a little off topic here, but now we're seeing a lot of overuse injuries with younger kids. But they're focusing a lot more on golf. So their techniques are probably a little better now than what they were 15, 20 years ago, which also has a huge role to play in creating more speed. And also, there's, I want to say, because there is more fitness information out there, a lot of kids are also training from a younger age.
Yeah.
So they're hitting the gym, you know, they want to train with their mates. There are a lot more fitness facilities available now at your residential estates. Yeah. So kids are able to go to gym now, you know, they'll be able to walk to gym. Whereas before, gyms were kind of almost anti-kids. Like yeah. you weren't yeah. really allowed to take your kids there. I remember being a lighty going to gym at maybe 14, 15.
Yeah.
And then everyone looked at you like you weren't supposed to be there.
Mm.
Whereas now you've got your kids' classes and you've got all sorts of things. So I think there are multiple roles, but...
But it's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. And I think on the flip side of that, I guess this is maybe the biokineticist in me that, you know, is wary about injuries and that kind of thing. It's also you need to have a certain amount of control to have that amount of speed.
Mm, yeah.
You know, it's one thing to have a club head speed of 120 miles an hour, but if you don't have the body that can support that,
yeah.
it's only a matter of time before yeah. something happens.
Yeah, and we've seen it on top level. And so just on that, if you look at the kids today, so we're speaking from quite a – what do you see in the difference between the top – of the amateurs at the moment in their personalities, their backgrounds, how they were potentially raised? And part of what I'm asking is that recently, I can't remember who sat here, and we spoke about Tiger Woods and everybody, Michael Balderston, and everybody thought Tiger focused on golf quite early on, but actually his dad diversified him into baseball, other sports, yes. and that was part of the psychology he wanted him to know. Then you've got kids at the moment in, let's say, more rural areas, you know, that OG Molefe Foundation, et cetera, is taking that golf. What do you see in the top boys? And is there probability of coming through the ranks if you are out of one of these estates versus I don't have access to that?
Yeah, I think the guys that are doing really well from an amateur point of view are still in, I want to say, a more traditional schooling system. Where extramurals are extra,
okay.
you know, they're not the forefront of your reason for going to school. And for that, some of those schools will still dictate that you've got to do a summer sport, you've got to do a winter sport, and your exposure to a more general, holistic, development is still there.
Yeah,
I think
team sport and individual.
Exactly. So you kind of, in your younger years in high school, you'll be forced to play both. And then as you get a little older, towards 16 or so, much like a subject choice, you then get to choose what kind of sport you want to, you know, perform in. So what we see is golfers who go to schools like that, from a physical perspective, tend to be a little bit better developed.
Okay.
The homeschooling option is a lot more viable now than it ever has been.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, it's their only option.
Yeah.
And also the downside to being more traditional schools is they're not willing to budge on being flexible to allow golfers to go and play events because golfers will also, they've got to travel. So, you know, then homeschooling then becomes, you know, your only option. So it's not to say that those kids won't develop, but it definitely, from a physical perspective, it helps to have more exposure to different sports because there's a lot of overlap in general sports skills.
Yeah.
For example, like kicking a soccer ball might seem completely unrelated to a golf swing, but you've got to plant a foot. You've got to transfer weight from one leg to another. You've got to rotate around an axis and you've got to kick it with some power.
Yeah.
You know, there's some skills there that you can, you know, take from football into golf. So in terms of like the development side, the SAGDB are doing great things in terms of trying to find, I guess, the proverbial diamonds in the rough because yeah. there's some incredibly talented athletes and kids that all they need is opportunity. And the SAGDB are providing great opportunities for kids like that to be exposed to golf. And I think in that case, they will make life-changing effect with them, so golf might push them into more the club fitting side or more into a coaching side. So maybe some of those golfers won't play golf, but they might go into the golf industry.
Yeah.
They might go into turf management. They might go into club management. They might go into other options, but it's exposing them to an industry that is bigger than people think.
Yeah.
The golf industry in South Africa is bigger than people think. So, and some of them obviously will play.
Yeah.
And we've seen a couple of kids come through, and that's, you know, that's awesome. You know, I think we're seeing a lot more players of color playing golf at representative level now than before. And that's amazing. Like, I think that's what we want. We want to see those kids have opportunities to play and be able to put their talent on display. I think golf is one of those sports where you're either good enough or you're not.
Yeah.
You know, it's your score against par.
Yeah.
So the guys coming through are really good. And the Sunshine Tour have got some good initiatives in there. And I think that golf's in a good space in South Africa. And I think people in general are a lot more positive about golf in South Africa, especially on an elite level, than we have been in previous years.
And it's quite scary to think as a young child. I mean, you know, not all of us are sitting here. We still have memories of when we were younger and grew up. But it's quite scary to think that pressure of specialization, let's say from 10, 11, or 12, that if you don't make it by 18, 19, 20, I mean, your whole life is sort of directed towards that particular goal. And that could be a very big disappointment when you get to the professional level and you're up against the talent that we see right around the world and you perhaps don't make it. I mean, is that something of concern?
Yeah. I mean, I think if, again, like with the information age being out there, you'll catch snippets of people's journeys. So you'll see a lot of the younger players and they're achieving success. You don't really understand the backstory of what's gone on behind there and what they've done to get to that point. I think with early specialization, I have no doubt. Like if I could give parents any piece of advice, it's let your kid play as many sports as they can up until 16, 17.
Okay.
Let them play what they want to play.
Yeah.
You can always fix technique. Yeah. Like let them gain the benefits of playing other sports. And that would, in the long run, put them in a much better position. I think, again, if I had to use a well-known example, someone like an A.B. de Villiers played a multitude of sports, and he was one of those cricket players that didn't really struggle with a lot of injuries. Maybe fortunate, but at the same time, you could look back and see perhaps there's a causality to, because he was so physically well-rounded as an athlete, perhaps his body was better able to handle the load of cricket.
Yeah.
And the impact of rugby.
Exactly. So, I played multiple sports when I was at school. I know there's Brandon Stowe playing multiple sports at school. So, it's not to say that you will succeed if you specialize early or you won't succeed if you specialize early. But I think in terms of performance, we have to remember that before you have a golfer, you have an athlete. And before you have an athlete, you have a human being. And if you neglect the human being component, or if you neglect the athlete component, the golfer suffers.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I can relate to that. I mean, it could be just by coincidence of what Gavin says, but I think I started taking golf seriously when I was a teenager. I can't remember the period, but it probably was from 13 to 16 years old, and golf was just everything that I did. And, I mean, I went to a traditional school, and you almost feel like the outcast because you're not playing rugby or hockey or cricket anymore. You're focusing on golf. You're traveling. I mean, I'm in a trick. I missed 90 days of school. I don't know how I passed.
That makes a lot of sense now. All of a sudden.
Very intelligent.
Yeah. I don't know how. Well, listen, give me credit. I passed. I actually did better than passed, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think I suffered with many injuries. Couple of factors due to that, but you know, could be random. How's this eye twitching? It's going boss. I'm trying to speak and it's just going but yeah, so I totally agree from a personal perspective on what Gavin is relating to, but I also think to relate or add on to that, fitness is a crucial part of any child's development, but it's clever fitness. We've always spoke about clever practice with a purpose.
Yeah.
There should be purpose, whether it's Gavin saying, listen, your glutes are off. I just want you to work on your glutes. Or, you know, I just want you to go for a 3K jog every day. Yeah. You know, some sort of structure growing up is crucial for development and maintenance. You know, injury, I mean, Erik van Rooyen, he suffered with injuries for 2 years. I think he played 8 majors suffering with injuries, managed to push through. But, you know, you go down such a dark road because you're playing golf not even to your capability based on how your body's reacting.
Yeah.
You know, so
and I think... there's a psychology effect to that too.
Huge mental effect. Yeah. So I think Gav gave his advice. My advice is anything fitness, technical, just do it with a bit of purpose and thought behind it and you should be on the right track.
From my perspective, you know, it's also respect for the game. You know, if you look at Formula One, you look at some of the sports that are out there at the moment, the training capacities that the guys are doing. If you think you're just going to wing and pray this and become a top 10 player in the world, that's just not going to happen that way. Mm-hmm. There's a particular type of level of professionalism. And Gav, a lot of people look up to you. A lot of youngsters relate to you. They get advice from you. So just go back to the British amateur that you won, you're the team behind that you were behind, but then also you mentioned it was a very low point for you.
Mm.
So just take us through that. And
yeah, I think it was, you know, it kind of links back to the journey of being working with professional golfers. You know, you're so invested in their journey. You spend a lot of time as a fitness trainer. You'll spend many hours with that person. You know, it's an hour a day. It's stretching afterwards. It's nutrition. It's, you know, chatting around the dinner table.
WhatsApps.
you know, you're always invested in the person's journey. So when you have a couple of golfers going through a difficult time, naturally you'll always sit back. Okay, is there something I'm missing? You know, as the trainer, am I missing something? Are we missing something? Is there something that we can do to help get that person out of the rut that they're in? And I think from now that I have a microphone in front of me, I think that's something that the pros don't necessarily also realize, is that the people that they have supporting them behind, the coaches, the staff, the guys are heavily invested in their journey. And I want to say, like, yes, we're doing it as a living. Yes, we want to make some money out of it. But it's, you know, you're fully invested in it regardless of the money sort of thing. So you're really pushing to trying and help that person achieve the goals that they've set for themselves, that you as a team have set for yourselves. And like I was saying to someone this weekend, you know, the lows and highs of the sport aren't for everybody. So, you know, in professional sport, there are some guys who've experienced the lows and be like, you know what? I actually need more consistency in my life. I need to work a regular job. Like, maybe I'm good enough to play golf, but I can't handle, the roller coaster.
Yeah.
And I know of a lot of golfers that have made that decision.
Yeah.
And you know, big
and
up
no judgment.
To them. Absolutely. Big up to them for being able to make that call. Mm. I think there's a lot of maturity in that. But then there's very few 9-to-5s that will give you the elation of winning a golf tournament.
Yeah.
And what you feel as a support staff, you know, when your player, you know, makes that last putt on the 18th green. I remember watching Brandon make that putt at Glendower.
Was it 2016?
SA Open.
SA Open, 2016.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, it was my, as a fitness trainer, it was my biggest win with a player. Yeah. And it was just, it was goosebumps, it was tears, everyone was going nuts, he was going nuts. It was the elation there was incredible. And that same elation was at the British Am. You know, it was like, holy cow, like, this is incredible. Mm. Like, it's very few
part 9-to-5s. Of history.
Very few 9-to-5s that can give you that kind of feeling. Like, you sell a laptop or you sell a car, it doesn't quite give you the same effect. So the highs are incredibly high, but the lows are incredibly low. And when you have, I mean, I'm probably working with around a dozen, you know, professionals at the moment. And when you have 4 or 5 of them going through lows, and only 5 or 6 that are going through highs, it's taxing. And you've got to stay grounded in what you're doing and understand, okay, well, my identity is not tied up in their performances either, as much as theirs aren't either. You know, they're still going to be loved whether they play golf or not.
Yeah.
I'm still going to be loved if I'm, you know, my guys are doing well or not. So you've got to have some solid grounding in terms of, you know, where you draw your true joy and identity from. But it does take its toll. And like, there's a lot of maturity that you've got to be able to develop. And the only way to develop that is to experience it, unfortunately. So, You know, like I think last year was a couple of months of, you know, my guys not doing as well as they were hoping for. They were going through, you know, their own struggles. Everyone has their own journeys and struggles. So, you know, you want to be there as a trainer, but also you want to be there as a friend. And I think I spent from the 20, I think it was around the late April to about the 3rd of July or so, I was overseas. So I was away from home for 11 weeks. I mean, I've got a wife, I've got two girls. It's a long time to be away from family. And I think I was about 5 or 6 weeks in, I was missing them. And then we had that week, you know, and that was just, it was just like, wow, okay, cool. There's some, not a light at the end of the tunnel. It makes it sound very morbid, but no, you know, it was kind of like, this is amazing. Okay, this is cool. And then that gave me enough energy to then, you know, carry on for the next 3 or 4 weeks before I went home.
So you have to be on quite a bit, you know.
And I think also as their trainer and let's call it mentor / friend, whatever you had to call it, it's also mentally taxing. So like you're probably part-time psychologist, full-time trainer type of a thing, because what do people do when they're training? You know, they let loose, they might vent, they might, you know, speak their mind. And I'm sure, golfers are just full of crap at the end of the day. They've got so many issues, to be honest.
Speak for yourself.
Speak for myself. I've been there, done that.
Yeah.
So it's difficult. Like even working with tour pros when they're searching equipment side, like they some of them are searching for something that's not there.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and they're tinkering with stuff and they're searching for things. And it's super, super tough dealing with pros. And I totally respect that, but I think there's more to Gavin's job title description, if you had to call that, than just throwing out weights. Yeah, yeah. You know,
many hats.
Yeah, 100%. When someone's low, you need to feel like you need to bring them up and throw a bit of positivity in.
Yeah, they kind of feed off you, you know, like 100%. As much as you're invested, you can't ride that roller coaster of emotion with them.
Yeah.
Like you've got to potentially be the person that helps them get out of that, you know, vortex of, you know, self-doubt or negativity or, you know, judgment or whatever it is that the golf is, you know, imposing on themselves. You've got to be the person that helps them get out of that. And I think that's the taxing part is trying to be the consistent person, because what they're looking for in consistency on the golf course, they also need consistency off the golf course. I mean, how many golfers do we see performing on the golf course where everything is a shambles at home? It's like very rare. Like most of the time, happy golfers are winning golfers.
I mean, look at Louis Alberto, just got married. Boom.
Boom.
What a month.
Maybe that's pressure to pay for the wedding.
Yeah. All the debt.
All the honeymoon.
All the honeymoon. But it's a fine balance of you have the support structure around you, but it's still an individual sport.
Mm-hmm.
And on the day, you know, the caddy's there with him, yes, but his support team is in the background. And those 4 days, and yes, I'm assuming afterwards and before the time, there's maybe conversations or maybe stretches down the afterwards to. But how do you keep that balance of I'm here to support you, but keep an independent arm that you can dig deep in the moment without having to WhatsApp Gavin for comfort?
Yeah, there's a lot of ownership that's got to come into the process by the golfers. I think when golfers take ownership of their process, they can. If they weren't emotional about their journey, then like there's some serious warning signs there, because it means you don't care.
Okay.
So the fact that they're emotional means that they care.
Okay.
So, but being able to take a step back and once the emotion has subsided, look at, you know, their performances objectively and look, did I warm up properly? Did I eat well on the golf course? Did I pick my targets on the, you know, was I good with my strategy? How was my communication with my caddy? And you can objectively, much like we would do in our 9-to-5s, you know, you would have a couple of, you know, measurables that you would look at the end of a day and look, okay, well, did I achieve those, yes or no? And if the answer is yes, then it's like, okay, well, maybe it's just a bad day on the golf course. It's not a reflection of me as a golfer. I'm not a bad golfer because I had one day, any more than one good day makes me a good golfer.
Yeah.
So I think having that emotional maturity to be able to take a step back once you've, I guess, dealt with the emotional side of it and look at what you're doing did you stick to the plans that you and your team have put together when emotion wasn't a factor?
Yeah.
So at the end of the season, when you sit down, you evaluate the year and how it's gone, and you look at the year coming and what kind of goals you're going to set. And, you know, are you putting in those KPIs? You know, are you following those to make sure that you are headed towards your goals?
Yeah.
And if not, then having, I guess, again, the emotional maturity to be able to, you know what, I screwed up.
Yeah.
I'm drifting.
Yeah.
I ate rubbish last night. I went and had, you know, a couple of beers or whatever it was. I'm back on the bike today. Rather than go down that spiral of, oh, well, I've let myself go. Let me just have a proper go.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and then if I'm going to do it, well, do it properly.
See you at 7 tonight. And Gavin, the if you, and it's one of my last questions, but if you, what type of attitude does it take to be a good golfer and to perform on that amateur level? And what I mean by that is that there's a lot of judgment on the generation we have today, you know, call it the younger generation, a lot of critical points. But if you look at rugby, it still maintains a very good reputation when it comes to sport, that it's clean, and that it's that the players are really look after each other. They're very humble. I mean, Sia has obviously set a standard for us and, you know, in my opinion, goes back 20 years before that as well. But when it comes to golfers, where golf could be considered an elite type of sport, it's considerably changed in the last 10 years aggressively to be a very inclusive sport. But what does it take? Are these guys full of attitudes or do they come with humble, let's get stuff done?
Yeah, I think golf at its core is a very self-centered sport. It's pretty much, it's you. You know, your talent and your ability is on show every single shot. And this is where we see golfers that are secure in their identity, I guess, as a person. Like they've got a good family background or maybe they've got a strong religious background. Golf is something they do. It's not something that they are.
Yeah.
So they could quite easily go do something else. Those are the golfers that are okay with failure. You've got to be okay with failing in golf. Golf, 95% of the time you're failing.
Even Tiger Woods at peak, 12% of winnings.
Exactly. So
the one before that, I think it's 7, Rory. That's the difference.
Yeah, so you spend a large amount of time failing.
Yeah.
But it's part of the journey as much as we don't want it to be. You know, failing is as much a part of the journey as winning is. So when you're, you know, when it's something that you do and it's something that you can, it's okay, well, today wasn't a great day, tomorrow is another day. And I think that's where someone like I had a couple of chats with Tristan Stratum's, Tristan Lawrence's caddy, and he says, you know, if Tristan has a bad day, you know, he comes back the next day. He knows he's a good golfer. If he didn't hit it well today, he knows tomorrow is going to be different. You know, there are a lot of golfers that you'll see, especially in South Africa, where you're fighting for every rand, you're fighting for every ranking point. Have a bad day on the golf course and straight off the bat that 2 hours on the range, you know.
Yeah, searching for something that's not there.
Searching for something that's not there.
Yeah.
But you're going to search if you don't have your structure.
Got you.
So if you've got good structures.
Yeah.
And good people around you, they will help you to remind you that, okay, you got to stick to your structures. Do your post-round maintenance work. Do your stretching afterwards. Do your ice bath. Do your stretching in the morning, that kind of thing. Then all of a sudden, your consistency, you start to derive consistency on the golf course from your consistency off the golf course.
100%.
So you wake up at the same time every morning. Like people who are that way inclined are the people that do well.
And that's not just in sport.
No.
You find that across to business as
absolutely.
Well. And in life. But here's a question to you, and maybe it's a little bit, but I personally think none of us have any entitlement towards an attitude. And I'll explain to you what I mean by that. Mm-hmm. So even if it's an individual sport, when you grew up, your parents were behind you. They made sure you just survived, you know, whether that's cold, whether that's food, whether that's planning for your future. Then you are privileged enough to get a coach, to get a bit of focus from a fitness perspective, to get clubs. Who are any one of us to have an attitude about who we are? Because everything in life, you know, you're part of 7 billion people in a cycle that has been going on for thousands of years. And now all of a sudden you think you're something special. And I hope I'm not being too harsh on that, but that's something I always speak about, that I personally think that if you have the ability and fortunate to be a golfer and to even have that prospect of becoming a professional, even playing in amateur ranks, excuse me, who are you to think you have any attitude or any entitlement to anything? Am I being too harsh when I say that?
I think professional sport lends itself towards feeding that aspect of the ego, and we're probably dipping a little bit more into the psychological element here, but I think that any sport where you are an individual sport, you're basically the center of attention, and everything is about you. You know, it's your routines, it's your performance. Even though you and the caddy are on the golf course, you're ultimately the one that hits the shot.
Yeah.
So it's your ability that's on display, and ultimately it's your failure too. Yes, your team is a part of it. So I think to a certain degree it lends itself that way. And, you know, if you don't have that good grounding, I think it can overtake you a little bit. Unfortunately, there have been way too many examples of how the golf industry and professional golf has led people astray. So I think, you know, to have a good grounding, to have a good family behind you, to have good support structures, to be a happy person in general, I think like that will help prevent a lot of those things. But golf, I think very much like a lot of individual sports, a lot of them will come across as being very egocentric.
Yeah.
Almost arrogant. And that's not really, it's not really them. Like, I don't know how many conversations you guys have had. It's like, oh, I thought that guy was a real chop, and actually he's the nicest guy. The
nicest guy ever. Yeah, sometimes perception.
It's the persona that you almost have to,
you
know, that you have to run with.
But Michael Block showed. Sorry, Arthie, go for it.
No, I was just thinking, I mean, with golf, you know, like you said, it's all about you, but there's many sacrifices that a golfer goes through.
Totally.
Which they don't understand. I mean, we chatted on the first episode with Eric. You know, at 18, 19, 20, you know, when you're trying to break onto tour and perform and stuff, you know, you're training in the morning, you're practicing all day, you're going traveling, you're playing tournaments. You've got zero social life.
You say no to a lot of mates.
Listen, I had so many upset friends at that phase of my life. Let's go to Hatfield Square tonight and this and this. I'm like, bro, I'm playing a tournament tomorrow. You know, and
I don't want to challenge this, but isn't it a bit boohoo? You know, so what? You missed a few social events.
You've chosen the sacrifice.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not just the sacrifice. It's context. So if I'm this morning, I get to get into a car. I get to, you know, have the ability to breathe and actually go and do it. Isn't it that a little bit of like, listen, I'm not for one single second not to that support structure to have that moment with the player. Thank you for the sacrifice. We know you missed a few weddings. But in the bigger world of opportunities, if you look at the bigger world picture, I go, boo-hoo, you know. You missed a few weddings. There are guys that have limbs that want to play and are more dedicated than you are. There are people that can't have birthday celebrations like a lot of the privileged people are. So, you know, boo-hoo. I don't know. I'm not trying to be difficult this morning.
Yeah. Well, maybe the Red Bull's only kicking in now and you're getting a second wind.
You can see he's way more awake now.
Yeah, all of a sudden. Listen, what I was trying to say is I was trying to answer your question and we can get the boxing gloves out now. But
I'll officiate.
at the end of the day, you know, it's such a roller coaster journey. Now you can't judge someone based on the phase they're going through. You get what I'm saying? I've had many mental, what's the right word, mental challenges in my career where I felt lost, and you know, you're doing the sacrifice and you're not seeing results and you're searching and you're putting in the effort, and it's such a mental journey where you could go meet a Kyle Barker and he's just going through he's the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
And you might just catch him where something in his personal life just happened or he's going through a dip.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean Kyle Barker is not a nice guy.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So boo-hoo to you too.
But I hope you guys understand. I mean, I'm not even coming from a judgment perspective.
I feel you. I
just feel like we are sometimes, you know, the moaning is so quick, you know, and it's always about perspective, you know. And like I said to you, and we said this so many times, you wake up in the morning, you go, oh, traffic was so bad this morning. Hold on, there's a person that took 4 taxis to get to work. We're in 2 accidents.
No, sure.
And you moan about the traffic you encountered.
I literally had a conversation with a pro last week, and I'm not going to mention names, and...
He'll know you're talking about him.
He'll know. I don't know if he'll be watching this.
Yeah.
You know, he's been going through a bit of a dip and a bit of mental struggles. And, I mean, he's a bloody good player. Okay. And I said to you, what happened on the weekend the other day? Like, how can you go Thursday, Friday and do what you did? And then go do what you did on the weekend. It makes no sense. It's not like you smelt fibers in the air that all of a sudden you're a different golfer. Like it was a complete 360. Like, what went on? No, I was tired. I just couldn't concentrate. So I'm saying, do you think a heart surgeon who operates on people's hearts and all of a sudden something goes wrong. 12 hours in. I lost your daughter because I got tired. I apologize.
It will be unexcusable.
It does not matter.
No.
So
there will be no compassion for it.
100%.
And
obviously now there's perspective to what I said.
Yeah.
I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a trainer. I'm just talking from experience. And I've just got the best interest for golfers in general. And... It's so difficult to... It's so easy being on the outside.
Sure.
Completely.
Versus being on the inside. Completely. It's totally different.
And I take nothing away from their personal effects, you know, family tragedies. Afrikaans
tragedies.
Coming through there. But I completely relate that they're also just humans, you know. But I feel like we have to toughen up a bit in the sense of it's... I absolutely love the idea, and I know it's simple words, where you get to do what you do versus I have to go and do it. And I know it's a cliche, but you have to keep perspective, even in business. You know, when you deliver something, when in your own business, when you fit somebody this morning, you know, you could have an hour before that could have been one of the most traumatic things you went through.
Yeah.
That client is going to be like, Arthur, I understand. But in some stage, he's also going to be like, well, I paid for this, and you didn't deliver.
The thing is with golfers.
Am I being too harsh here, guys?
The thing is with golfers, sometimes they don't know how to help themselves. You know, they...
But that day, well, there's guys. And also, these guys we speak about is young. You know, when you're 14, 15, 16,
this is what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Golfers, professional golfers, are always looking for excuses other than themselves. I'm not generalizing because sometimes, you know, it's lack of structure, you know, not sticking to your program, not doing your work on and off the golf course, etc. Like I did it, you know, have a phone call with your dad. What happened today? Oh, no, it was a 4-club wind.
Yeah.
It was a 4-club wind for everyone.
Yeah.
You know?
Bad bounce.
Yeah. I heard a hardy da in the background on my downswing, like stupid stuff. There's always these stupid things where just take accountability for yourself and carry on. Yeah. And this is harsh. Listen, it's coming from...
No, but I think perspective is a great tool. Like, I think being part of the support structure, you know, with professionals is always to try and help them gain perspective on what they're doing. You know, what these guys are doing on tour... They are the top 0.01% of golfers.
Yeah.
You know, they are the best people, the best golfers in the world, even here in South Africa. You know, there are some incredible golfers out there. And if they have a bad day, I mean, them shooting one or two over is better than 90% of the golfers out there. We won't sniff 80, never mind 72.
Correct.
So they get to play golf for a living. They get to walk the most beautiful golf courses in the world, you know, and do this for a living. They don't have to sit at a desk And taking nothing away from sitting at a desk, because my cousin's an accountant, and she loves her job. So
yeah.
I think that, you know, that these guys get the opportunity to showcase, you know, a God-given talent to be able to do what they love, and potentially earn some money from it.
Yeah.
But more than that, they get to live a life that's quite different.
Yeah.
And that always needs to be handled with a dollop of perspective.
Yeah.
I've got golfers, friends that are going through, you know, some incredibly challenging personal, you know, seasons.
Yeah.
And they're pitching up and they're doing their stuff. So again, like there's that little bit of a toughen up, you know, mentality where I think you have to struggle. As a golfer, you've got to struggle at some point in your career, because
100%. Not just for golf, but for life.
Yeah, it's where it's kind of where your restrictions as a person, you know, like your limitations as a person become exposed. And once you know what you're really bad at, you know what not to do, or you know, okay, I don't want to go down that route anymore. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was probably in 2015 or so, Brandon was playing on the Challenge Tour. Brandon Stone was playing on the Challenge Tour, and he was going through a challenging time. He'd missed a couple of cuts by one, and he wanted to come home. And his coach at the time, Llewellyn, said to him, "You will stay there, and you will figure it out." And he did. And he ended up getting his card at the end of 2015 or so. And then two events into having his card, he won SA Open.
Mm.
But he has to go and figure it out himself. Mm. You know, couldn't just rely on Llewellyn, one of us,
fly down and come
to come and rescue him and give him some answers that, you know, that he needed to find out by himself. So I think the struggle part of golf, although it's not a nice time to go through, it's a very necessary part of the journey. Yeah.
100%.
Because it will also help to what's the word, galvanize yourself. Mm. You know, it's like protect yourself a little
Excuse
bit.
The pun.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you. Yeah, I mean, that's part of it as well. And I think, you know, again, you know, if you add some dollop of perspective into all of that, these guys should be struggling, so that when they succeed, the success is all the more worth it.
Yeah. So, Gavin, just from my perspective, you spoke about grounding, and it's my last question, but you have to play this role, smile and wave a lot, where I'm assuming you don't always feel like smile and wave. So you must have a ground structure yourself that you can relate to and speak to, and help you boost. Who's that for you?
So my wife is, you know, an incredible person. I think that she is also honest enough with me to call me out on my BS when she needs to. You know, my faith is an important part of my life. It's the thing that I center my life around. So those, you know, those are the two main things. Like, I love my kids. Like, I absolutely adore them. So for me, having a bad day at work, I get to come home and I get to, you know, hang out with my girls. And that's, you know, that for me gives me perspective. When I'm out there and one of my players is having a bit of an emotional go and he's trying to let off steam and, you know, I'm catching the brunt of it, you know, I just remind myself, it's like, okay, I'm doing this because I want to provide for them. You know, so I try as much as I can, you know, to keep perspective that way. When I'm having a bad day on the golf course, I'm like, well, you actually got a chance to play golf, Kev. You never practice.
You were playing golf yesterday, by the way.
I played golf yesterday. Oh, yes, I did. I played at Kailami.
Oh,
it was good fun. For 9 holes. And then the other 9 holes, I went into that dark vortex, as most of us tend to do. So, and then I had the perspective afterwards. So,
I
was lecturing myself. But I love this game. Like, I think it's the most awesome thing. It's very rare that you can play this game of golf as like a little 8-9 year old kid, and you can play this game of golf as like an 80-year-old person.
Yeah.
And you can play on the same field, you know, and you can, in and amongst all of that, there's new sports coming through, but you know, at the end of the day, golf is still what it is.
You know?
And it's such a great game. It's such a great leveler, and it's, you know, it's the kind of sport that takes you outside, which is awesome. You know, a lot of people need that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we hate talking about COVID days, but it was one of those saving graces for a lot of people. A lot of people actually picked up golf during COVID because it was one of the few things that you could do.
Yeah.
So, and since then have continued on their journey. So, I mean, we haven't really spoken that much about the professional side of it, but I think from an amateur point of view, like, you know, golf is still one of the best forms of exercise that, you know, you could do. You're walking around outside, enjoying your time, you're spending some time with some good friends or meeting some new people. And it's far better than sitting at home feeling sorry for yourself.
Mm. Well, Gavin, I tell you, it's like you just mentioned there. I mean, the subjects I still have here to discuss. So we might have to do a second session at some stage. But I want to thank you so much for the role that you play in golf. I want to thank that your support structure when you were younger, that it took you to a place where we can all brag about that we have some of the best amateurs in the world. And thank you for the role that you've played there. And for Golf RSA, like you mentioned, you know, the support financially that we get from that, Mr. Rupert doesn't always put himself at the forefront of all of that, but he's so behind the scenes. And for all the players that also stick with the South African coaches, and I don't mean to say that it's a good or a bad thing, but that they stay loyal to the base here, because there's always something to the people that helped you towards it, and I believe in that loyalty. You know, I believe, and I'm very happy that you mentioned some of that, that when we become successful or when we have a glimpse of success, that we all of a sudden become somebody completely new. I just think that's... We need to have perspective of those people that helped us to get there. We need to be grateful for that. And for me, it's not even an attitude thing. It drives you and it motivates you forward. So thank you for the role that you play. And also to your wife and kids that I don't know, but especially to your wife, thank you for the support that she plays in your life so that you can be stable and sit here this morning, calm, cool, and collective. And have this incredible opportunity to sit with you, Gavin. And I want to expand with you, and I want to almost challenge you that I think you need to put a few programs together which will help you film. But I wanted to go into your social medias, and I've got a few tips that I'm certainly going to implement in the in the gym structure.
Yeah, no pressure.
I think you need to take the time to give us a little bit of where the everyday golfer, you know, can warm up routines, because it's important. You know, we've seen injuries. What we can do in the gym, what we can do at home to better our golf as well.
Yeah.
And I think you need to put that out, and I want to give you an open invitation to come and do it here with cameras so that we can put it out there
I was just going to... Eventually, when you let me finish.
Okay, sorry, my apologies.
It was such a good closing, though. That was a great closing.
Get straight into it. But obviously, Gav, thanks for your time. I also want to encourage our listeners, you know, if there's anything from a fitness and functionality point of view on the golf side you want to know more about, et cetera, I'm sure we could...
We'll put his links there.
Yeah, we could do something with Gav. I think it's important. I think us individuals have such a passion for golf, want to grow the game, grow opportunities, etc., etc. So to the listeners out there, if you have any other questions related to Gav and you want him back, or there's something that we need to do or elaborate deep into, because we tend to get emotional and into it.
You get a bit long-winded too.
Yeah, but it's so much fun. So
I
enjoy this a lot. But please let us know what questions you're looking for, what answers you're also looking for, and what we can elaborate and help at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I think it's crucial, because there's so much information out there that's also too much information, and, you know, where do you go from there? So I think... I think we're onto something, but let us know, please.
Well, Llewellyn said it the same thing, you know, and this is important, because, Gavin, the reason we go on a format like this is because you always just get snippets.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
The interview needs to be so many words. Okay, stop, you know, stop.
Or advertisers, so long.
There's no advertiser pressure here. This is just the story of a South African that plays an incredible role in golf. And Llewellyn said it too. It's maybe a good idea that we do have that program available, that you just give 5, 7, 8 tips, and we'll bring him in for that again.
Just don't use me as a dummy.
Because Llewellyn says the worst thing that he's up against, and that's singular format, is YouTube advice and Instagram advice.
And, also coaches that are not TPI, you know, TPI certified
or qualified, you know, and also relatable. I mean, I enjoy the fact that we have a South African, and it's not about international South African, but there's enough voices overseas. It's good to hear from a South African perspective that we get Gavin in. And it's interesting, Gavin. We've seen the listeners do find this interesting.
Mm.
Trust me, when Arthur and I started this, we also like, you know, who am I? You know, at least he's got some credibility. But who wants to listen to this? But we find people do.
Yeah.
They find it interesting. They want to get longer format. And anyway, what are we doing tonight? You're going to listen to some sort of show that's not really going to contribute towards your life, you know, instead of listening to this for an hour. And whether you're a parent going through this at the moment,
sure,
you know, your kids, or whether you're a professional, or even just an average golfer wanting to get the insights and a little bit of mindsets, this is great format to talk about it.
Yeah, and I think like the information that you put out there, so what it should do is it should really push you towards trying to find someone close to you that can help you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like the information that I've gathered over the years, like it's not mine to own.
Yeah.
Like I'm a custodian of the information that I've got because I've learned it from other people.
Yeah.
So it would be wrong for me to hold on to information. But at the same time, I think information applied incorrectly can also be quite dangerous.
Yeah.
So I think I've always said there's no such thing as a bad exercise, just bad application.
Yeah.
So if we can, you know, if we can, I guess, stimulate people to want to go and get more specific help in the sense of, okay, well, I need to go and see someone who does an assessment with me.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not testing, you're guessing.
Yeah.
You know, as TPI would say. So tools like TPI is it's one of those things that you can use. They will be the first to admit that they are not the be all and end all of all things golf.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of professionals in South Africa who also work in golf, who work with golfers, who have great skill sets. That maybe aren't seeing as many golfers as they should. And, you know, maybe that's my role, is to try and encourage people to go and find someone who works in golf and to go and see that person, because, you know, getting some tips online is great. Like, I think it's awesome. I think some of those things have really helped. I know I got a lot of people that said COVID times, you know, some of the tips really helped.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. But I think what it should do is it should push people towards getting, you know, more specific help. Like, golf tips online is great, but go and see your local PGA professional.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that are going to help you the best.
Yeah.
So if that's what this, you know, allows people to do is highlight the importance of going to see someone, then absolutely all for it.
Listen, exercise in general, a lot of people believe in exercising on a weekly basis or 4 or 5 days. You might as well lean it towards a sport that you enjoy playing over weekends, so that your body can adapt to it. Because the ego part of muscles, and you know what, everybody wants big muscles and big cuts, it's not always conducive to a good golf swing over the weekend.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we've seen an explosion of sports like paddle at golf courses now.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I'll say categorically, although it's great for a defrag and, you know, the social elements and
for the generally club.
There's, you know, there's a lot of physical benefits from playing a sport like that.
Yeah.
To use another sport as a way of training for another sport is never good.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah.
So, you know, for example, and again, like, CrossFit will have its own, you know, its own discussion, but using another sport like CrossFit to train for golf,
yeah,
you know, it's not going to work for you, because golf is a sport on its own and has its own very specific sport requirements.
Yeah.
Just the same as another sport would.
Yeah.
So whilst all is good in general, I think to use one of those, you know, one of those parameters just for a sport is a potentially dangerous thing. So I think, you know, with paddle being so prevalent now and one of the fastest growing sports in South Africa, it's also, I see a lot of golfers who like playing paddle. I'm like, fantastic, because it's not golf.
Yeah.
But we also need to incorporate some other things into that to make sure that we don't injure yourself.
Yeah. Mm. Kevin, thank you so much.
Arthur, pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you stayed awake this entire episode.
I wasn't facing you this time. I was facing Gavin. So
you could be full asleep after all those.
I was actually contemplating, you know, while you guys go, can I just doze off for 2 minutes? Will anyone notice?
For a moment there.
But yeah, it's been fun. Yeah. Gav, thanks for your time. Pleasure. Really, really appreciate it. We go back many years. Always nice to bump onto you to the tour and see all the good work you do on the tour. And yeah, very excited to see what happens this year with the South African golfers and, you know, what we can do for individuals in this country in the golfing industry.
Thanks, Arthi. Awesome. Gavin, once again, thank you. And
thank you to you guys.
And blessings of everything you do, man.
Appreciate it.
Every hand that you touch, every player that you influence, everybody you speak to, and just in your own life as well. We really bless it and hope you have a fantastic year.
Thank you. Appreciate that.